Hello and welcome to another episode of the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at RadioReverb.com, on DAB, on Smart Speaker, and of course on our podcast. I'm Eddie Packham and we're all checking to see how much holiday we've got left in association with oldfootballshirts.com. Well, what a week that has been. The draw has now been made and we now know who will be playing on our first ever European tour. So, two former champions of Europe and a perennial qualifier for the Champions League awaits us in what many are calling the group of death. And we'll also do it wearing a brand new shirt featuring the outline of the Royal Pavilion, which on some will make the pavilion appear in 3D. And also, we may not even wear it. But that is not forgetting, of course, the news that one of the hottest young talents in Europe, the man who inherited Messi's number 10 shirt at Barcelona and played 51 times for them in all competitions last season, winning La Liga, scoring 10 times, he signed for Brighton on loan. And also, in case you've forgotten, we have signed Cameroonian Carlos Baleba from Lille for a fee believed to be about £25 million. Oh, and we also played West Ham, but we'll gloss over that one. But it was a game that saw Pascal Gross become the Albion's Premier League top scorer. And that's a great milestone for Pascal, but perhaps not as great as getting his first senior German international call-up. Oh, and Gareth Southgate also remembered that Lewis Dunk exists. And joining me today, then, as we look back on this momentous week, is, of course, Alan Wares. And we're delighted to welcome back the fabulous Mark Brailsford and the ever-wonderful Ian Hart. Welcome, chaps. It's been, it's been quite the week, hasn't it?
Hi, AD. Hello, everyone.
Hello, Mark. Lovely to see you. It's who's going to start here? I mean, I don't know about
I'm going to remind you of something you tweeted this morning, which it's been a brilliant week. Obviously, the European draw, we've been looking forward to this since we qualified. And it's been, you know, we've all had the date, the 1st of September, penciled in our diary since we found out when it was. We've been looking at the dates and thinking, oh, let's make sure that those dates are clear. But there, of course, there are some people for which those dates are forever clear.
Well, the point I wanted to make about putting that tweet out there was you know, this is a major day in the history of Brighton Hove Albion. It's a red letter day. It's the next stepping stone. It's the next level up. You know, whatever phrase you want to put on it, and it just gave me pause for thought, thinking, you know, what a great day this is for the club. But how did we get here? And that's when I come back to those four. I mean, Ian, I think you probably knew these guys a bit better than some of us, but specifically zeroing in on Paul Welsh, Roy Shooter, Sarah Watts and Ed Basford. I mean, just how, if you can put some historical context on this, how key have they been for the club?
Well, basically, we probably wouldn't be here if it hadn't been for the likes of these people and the likes of Dick Knight and whoever. And, you know, I think that's really a really important point. I don't do Twitter or X, is it called now?
Yeah.
Or it's like Harry Potter and it's the work of the devil. But I just think, you know, that we do have to remember where we came from. On the corresponding week 25 years ago, we played Torquay United at the Priestfield with Jeff Minton and Gary Hart getting the goals in a 2-0 win with little over 3,000 people watching. And to think that we'll probably potentially be taking over 3,000 to Ajax, taking over 3,000 to Marseille. It does show how far we've come, but you're so right. We have to remember where we come from. And, you know, I do think that this is a wonderful journey. And it is a roller coaster ride, and we love every minute of it, even when we get beat by West Ham in a game that we could have won. But we you know, even all our youngest fans do need to have a nod to the past and just remember what, you know, the sacrifices people made. And it was sacrifices. We all did, you know, Alan, I can remember Ibiza. Do you remember when we were doing our
Well, this is actually you're actually raising a point. I wanted to start here because when we're talking about the times of the Albion going to the High Court, and we're talking 30 years ago now, but the Albion having their own revolving door at the High Court, Beza starting up, and there was yourself and Peter Cannard when they ran Goalseye, which was a fanzine. A fanzine is something that you might need to ask your dads about, kids. The point I was actually going to make in knowing that you were coming on is that Ian Hart, and a few others, but Ian Hart was one of the first ones to stand up and say no. Now, we didn't know that the Goldstone was going to be sold. We didn't know we were going to be in exile. We didn't, these things, you know, we just saw a poorly run club. But the point is that, and this is where I want to pay tribute to Ian Hart, is that he was one of the first ones to stand up and say no and challenge people and start a discussion, which frankly was always a little bit one-sided by the time the club started talking to us, because we weren't allowed to talk to them. And I think that, you know, that as much as I could actually laud those heroes that I was talking about, and obviously those that are still with us, I've got to actually say that Ian Hart was the one who was right, who was there, one of the first ones to start it all.
But it wasn't just me, and bizarrely, and I don't want to, it's only since I've become a businessman myself, because what you have to remember, back then I was just working for someone. I didn't really understand how balance sheets work. I didn't really understand how, you know, how the world worked, basically. The thing that really sticks, and I'll bring Mark and AD in as well on this, the thing that really sticks in my craw even now is that Archer has recently had to give HMRC back £22 million.
Really?
For over a tax avoidance scheme. Not evasion, avoidance, right? So the money he actually made out of us was like money you find down the side of a sofa. What was his motivation for it? It just really still sticks. In, you know, I still think. Sadly, Brian Harwood died recently, and I had the privilege of looking after him because, you know, Brian was the last groundsman at the Goldstone, who actually famously tipped us off for the York City game. He says, if you break the crossbars, the game won't finish because we haven't got any replacements.
Fantastic.
But, sadly that he had a photo slide show and Greg Stanley popped up, you know, and I just don't know. But clearly it was money. But what was their real motivation? Because at the end of the day, they could have made money on other things. Why did they pick on us? Why did they pick on us?
Yeah. I mean, that's a story which
we'll
forever tell, and we will never forget it on this show. But this is a week for celebration, and we'll
come back. This is a week for celebration. But Al did bring that up. But you know, as you say, it's a week for celebration.
And it's still important, but everyone along the way, and everyone who helped get us to this point along the way are equally as important as those guys as well.
Hang on, AD, go on, Ian.
Yeah,
I don't want to sound like Leonard Cohen because it is a great week, you know, and it's an unbelievable week. We got Lip Up Fatty's come now. Maybe we'll get Buster Blood Vessel to make a remake of the song, you know. And
oh, please.
You know, he's already done a version of Sussex by the Sea,
and we can never get away from that. We can never get away. And I was sat because I've retired, but I've never worked so hard in my life. And I was actually sat with a bereaved family who, thankfully, are all Brighton fans at lunchtime, and we were discussing Dad's funeral arrangements. And then someone pipes up and said, "I wonder who we got in the draw."
Mark, I have to ask you, mate. Mark, where are you on this journey? I mean, one assumes that you've been on it for the same 30 years, but how are you feeling today?
Well, I remember my dad taking me to the Goldstone 73. I was a tiny kid. His dad took him. You know, we all got the history. And I think that's what amazing to mention. You know, when you mention Ed Bassford, we talk about Roy, dear old Roy, and all those wonderful people that contributed. And we all fought to keep the club alive for this reason. And those kids that come along, the new guys, we did it for them as well. And we all campaigned and we all did the marching, and we had some fantastic people working with us, didn't we? I mean, I was just a tiny one of thousands of people just helping out and occasionally writing for Coleseye, but under a pseudonym, you won't remember. But you know, going back all those years, how much it means is the other reason why it's a beautiful moment, is because you look at your signing with a Barcelona player, you look at this incredible, we're in the Europa League, and seeing Paul Camlin and Paul Barber in those shots, if you saw the footage, you know what was really nice is actually there was a nice gesture having Paul Camlin said that he's been part of that, this journey so much as well. Also the most,
he was a Goals Our salesman.
He was chilling on the
Paul
corner.
Camlin was a Goals Our salesman. Great. It was this young hobbledy hoy who turned up privately educated from Zion Convent. There are other independent schools available.
and
it is. And I actually texted Paul today because and said, please enjoy every moment because you've earned this,
and you have worked so hard.
You know, and when he was editing the program at Gillingham and things like, you know, and we were buying players at Withdean, and look, it's been a great journey, and we can look forward to even more times. I do wonder what Sussex Police make of it all, because we've probably got three of the most robust set of supporters coming to Brighton.
We will be speaking to Darren Balcombe about this, don't you worry.
I could actually probably tell you about this, actually, and I'll tell you for why I know that. And Darren Balcombe, obviously a good friend of the show, good friend of many people, even though he's a Man U fan, is that when they did have the
Champions... And a copper.
A proper copper. the thing is, when they've had the Champions League final at Wembley, when they got two sets of fans arriving in from different countries, they sent one to Heathrow and one lot to Gatwick. And of course, Gatwick comes under Darren's remit. So they're kind of familiar with that kind of thing happening. So I think it's great that him and his colleagues in Sussex Police have got a little bit of a head start on that.
Darren's used to travelling away with England as well, so he knows what to do and how to organise it. But for the club, it's everything. There's so much to organise. It's brilliant, Harty.
Yeah, I mean, what I've meant more was we're all looking forward to going to Marseille and Amsterdam, and for the younger members listening to the show, there's a lot more to do in Amsterdam than just football. There's the Anc Museum.
Well, let's hope they behave themselves.
Yes,
the Anc Museum,
the Anc Museum, and amongst all sorts of things, and AEK Athens is you know going to be absolutely superb. It's just so exciting. Do we know when the fixtures are actually going to be out?
We suspect it's going to be this weekend.
UEFA promised by Saturday morning. So by the time you listen to this, there's a good chance that absolutely all the fixtures are known and Seagulls Travel are going to have a meltdown.
But they are. I spoke to Seagulls Travel because their office is just along from my office. They are working with an Atoll licensed travel
airline, yes.
So they are going to be chartering flights. I mean, I think it's going to be great for 2-3 days in Amsterdam because there's plenty to do.
Yes,
and there's you know, Athens. There's all the great, you know, all the culture. I'd probably say of the three, Marseille's probably going to be the one that you want to get in and get out fairly quickly.
Yes.
Yeah, now, Mark, I was going to ask you about that. Because you went to Marseille with England, I believe.
Yeah, dodging very, shall we say, mad Russians at the time. It was pretty tasty. And I think that is a worry, that we're going to places that obviously, a lot of our fan base aren't used to going to these places. Yes, I've been lucky enough to go away with England and watch these games. But yes, Marseille was particularly, you know, shall we say, tense. But I mean, like a lot of us in England games, we do, you kind of hope that you get a bit of a nose for these things. We stay out of the viewport, which is where the main trouble was. And you try and stay away from, I mean, dare I say it, the Irish bars, which is weird, isn't it? England fans always go away to the Irish bar. But then, you know, you stay away from the big crowds because that's the target, and just behave yourselves and be nice. Be ambassadors for the club and for our game and for the Albion, because, you know, we've, as Harty, you were saying, we've all fought so hard to survive, to come this far. It wouldn't be awful if it wasn't, you know, respected when we get there, and to wear the badge of pride and all that, you know. But be good.
I would say to you know that unfortunately, as we've evolved and we've been on this journey, we have inherited a very, very small minority of people who don't behave themselves at away games in England. Mm. I just hope that they either can't travel because they haven't got passports, or if they do go, they behave themselves. Because as my mate just said to me in the Cricketers in Broadwater, there are other pubs available in Worthing. as he said
really
to
there
me
aren't.
In Broadwater, Marseille is a canned place. If you want it in Marseille, you can get it. And if you go to the wrong places, you'll get it really badly. You know, I think he was probably there when you were there, Mark, in 1998. And they got rammed off the road by Algerians just driving in with England fevers, I think is the word, in their car. You know, so we are going to have to watch out. But sad, it's a bad old world.
Presence is interesting on that side as well, because the game I'm particularly remembering is the game against Russia, in the England game there, and it was particularly harsh. The police presence was difficult. As we all know, it can be a challenge going to different countries, different policing cultures, and you hope that maybe there's an Albion input on the stewarding, perhaps. And I'm sure that, because, you know, for example, Paul Cameron, you know, he goes to England games, so he knows.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of his expertise within the club. They've been talking to West Ham, haven't they, talking about how they handled their campaign. So there should be a lot of intelligence about, and hopefully, you know, we can all, you know, police ourselves really to a degree, and then you know, be ambassadors for our club.
One thing that does concern me is that, and it was a concern about whether we were going to get a game in France, especially with what happened in the Champions League final about 18 months ago, which, you know, UEFA didn't come out of it smelling of roses. Certainly the French government and the French police didn't come out smelling. And they were happy to blame Liverpool fans. And yes, it took Liverpool and Real Madrid getting together and finally getting to the truth. But, you know, there was that kind of effectively a government cover-up. You know, the footage was lost. There was batons, there was pepper spray and what have you. Now, you can't necessarily have all aspects of French society all pinned on that one particular sort of game. But, you know, like you say, as soon as there are... Well, Marseille ended up with a ban in Europe last season for it all kicking off. It is a concern. I mean, when you take two looks at the fringe of it, of the outside of it, without knowing the whole detail, it's concerning.
Look at the positives of this. Sorry to interrupt, Al. But look at the positives. You know, we're playing in Europe. It's going to be great for them. You know, just as long as we all just keep our wits about us, enjoy this amazing journey, get out there and watch our team in Europe. It'd be amazing. And look at the positives. We've got this great signing from Barcelona, you mentioned. You know, and what a time. We've got Roberto De Zerbi. I think he's going to tear Europe up. It's going to be amazing. So let's look at that positive.
Yeah, there is that. And don't forget, we've also got these teams. We're playing Ajax, former European champions, at the Amex in a competitive game. These aren't friendlies. Yes. This is going to be, you know, Marseille, former European champions. They're coming to the Amex as well, and you know this is fantastic. You know, the fact that we've just released a shirt that's predominantly white against a team that play in white, and a team that play in red and white.
I just want to move this on just a second, because I mean, obviously we're talking about the teams and we're talking about going to visit these places, but I did actually do a little bit of a trawl of social media, certainly with the Ajax and the Marseille fans, to get an idea as to what they think of the draw. Now, of course, Ajax and Marseille are the two relative heavyweights of the group. But it's interesting reading the Marseille fans' attitude. One, I don't think they think much of their club, but I think there's an element of kind of support. The English equivalent would be supporting Chelsea, where they've got the vast oceans of self-entitlement. They're always moaning. They think they should be the top dogs in France, etc., etc. But their point is that they don't know much about Brighton. And the Ajax fans are saying this, but their attitude is, yeah, Brighton, never mind that, Roberto De Zerbi. You know, I think that he could actually just, if he came and fixed your bathroom, if he came and mended your car, if he came and painted your house, it's Roberto De Zerbi. Therefore, it's going to get done brilliantly. So Brighton and Hove Albion's an enigma, a bit of an anathema to them, but they certainly know about Roberto De Zerbi.
I could just imagine him wandering around with a tool belt and like those trousers with multiple pockets with screwdrivers and
yeah, but you know full well he'd take one out of one pocket, put it in the other one, and everyone's going, "Hang on, where's that gone?"
That's how we fix it. And obviously, it's going to be Joel Veltman's going to be reunited with Ajax as well. Mm. You know, there's going to be lots of sub stories to this. It's going to be so exciting.
The point I was making here, AD, is that despite the fact it's our first time in Europe, these clubs are aware of what Brighton's at, and then you know, and Ajax obviously, Ajax have their history in Europe as well. I think they've fallen by the wayside a little bit, but again, not to be underestimated. But like I say, it's incredible the rise, or the consideration of the rise that Brighton have had, that the fans of these well-established European powerhouses are nervous about playing Brighton.
Mark?
Yes, well, I was looking at the odds. Somebody pointed out today that apparently we're second favourites, I think. I mean, this is extraordinary.
The group of the competition.
I think for the competition. And I think that's a reflection on, like you said, Roberto De Zerbi. It's also a reflection of perhaps we could surprise a few teams with the way we play. Because look at the quality of the Premier League that we're in, that we've qualified from. And you look at the quality of those leagues elsewhere. You know, Ligue 1 is not exactly, you know, top end in the sense that PSG seem to walk it every week. And then you've got, obviously, the Dutch League, which, with due respect to it, isn't the strongest. And Athens, not usually features in latter stages. So, you know, I fancy our chances, and I think this is going to be very interesting, because if we progress, wow, sky's the limit. It's going to be incredibly exciting.
I mean, that's the enigma, isn't it? We just don't know how good we are against European opposition. Yes, we play very well against the Premier League. Are we going to freeze? Are we going to be knackered because we're playing Sunday, Thursday? You know, there's so many things to consider, and it's probably not worth actually worrying about or thinking about until such time as we've thrown ourselves headlong into the competition. And I hope we do throw ourselves headlong into the competition, provided it doesn't actually affect our standing in the Premier League. But it's the great unknown that people are kind of, I think, almost so excited about.
Yeah, I mean, going back to Mark's point there, I mean, traditionally, we've always struggled against teams that play with a low block, come like to soak up the pressure and try and hit us on the count. Hello, West Ham. Hello, Everton. But hopefully, these teams in European competition, we're not going to see so much of that. Teams are actually going to come out and actually try and play against us, which will give us more opportunities to attack and actually imprint our normal game on them.
Can you
that
imagine?
First game is going to be vital there. If we do well in that first game, win that first game, maybe it's a home game, and it sets the tone, that really sets us up. I think that first game is massive.
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, can you really imagine this astonishing academy that is Ajax of Amsterdam, with their flair players and their tactical nous, insisting on a low block against, well, anyone, let alone us? I mean, that's where the hope comes from me, because anyone who doesn't play a low block against us, we can turn anyone over. And I'm also looking at you, Manchester City, champions of Europe. So, yeah, I mean, there's just so many things to consider. I can't see Ajax coming at us and sticking 10 men, you know, into the penalty area.
Yeah. But also, I mean, this is Ajax, who famously lose all their best players every year and yet somehow manage to regenerate new ones. It's us.
Funny that.
Yeah, but okay. Obviously, these are all fantastic games to look forward to. But we've also
20 days away.
It's not far.
Yeah, brilliant, super.
But we're also right in the middle of the transfer window, which is at the time of recording hasn't closed as yet. It's actually closing this evening. I don't think we're looking at any more business coming in, but I'm keeping an eye on it.
How many more do you want to come in, mate? Look at what we've
got. Well, there's rumours that Locatelli could still be happening, which is Bearing in mind his relationship with De Zerbi, I think it might be a lot of like people putting like two and two together and making 56. But yeah, it's but let's have a look at the players that we have brought in. Let's start with Carlos Baleba, player we've been flirting with bringing in for quite a while. Depending on which publication you read, the transfer fee was anything from 20 to 27 million. So there's another. And to go on top of the 30 million we paid for João Pedro, that's 57 we spent on transfer fees. The others have all been free. Is that, am I making that? Is that right? Can't remember us paying for anyone else.
Cost for the Barcelona player, because obviously there's a huge amount of wage.
There's so many stories about that. Apparently we were put, depending again,
be careful about believing Fabrizio Romano is all I'd ever say to you.
I won't believe him. Here we go.
80% of his salary apparently, and Barcelona's salaries are going to be stupid. Apparently amazed if we're going to match that.
Apparently at Barca he's on 199 grand a week. We're not going to be anywhere near 80% of that.
No. So yeah, I mean, it's just sort of numbers roulette, isn't it? Just roll the dice, see what we can come up with. No one's going to believe. And let's put it this way. The Albion, of all clubs that's going to know about their finances and what we can and can't afford, you know, they know they're not going to pay silly money for that. I mean,
yeah. But Mark Baleba, 19 years old, only played a handful of games for Lille last season. Very, very highly rated. They're saying he's more in the Basuma mould than in the Caicedo mould.
I saw that.
He's been brought in probably as a direct replacement, but you know, he's not going to hit the ground running necessarily, is he?
I agree with that. Yeah, I think we mustn't put too much expectation on a very young player. Like you said, he's only played 19 games in Ligue 1. So I think understanding that, like Basuma, when he came in, it took a few games, if you remember. Not so much with Cassette.
Took more than a few.
Basuma. Yeah, it took a few. And we've got to give these youngsters a go and not put too much pressure on. I think De Zerbi's perfect for that, isn't he? He knows what to do here. And in De Zerbi we trust, don't we? So I don't think we'll see him too quickly. And I hope they'll be careful with both of them and Sue as well, because, you know, they've got to learn a new culture, a new language to them as well. A new world. You know, it's a big, big step.
Yeah, but it's still only about 200 miles away.
Thank you, Marco Polo.
as we once famously sang, we're Brighton Hove Albion, we're practically French.
We are. Ian, I mean, we'll talk about the Buster Blood Vessel chap in a second, but
yeah,
I don't think we've had you on the show since he took over. Now, in an acquiring fatty, he's actually said that it's actually down to De Zerbi that he's come here. I probably know the answer, but let's hear it from you anyway. What's your take on Roberto De Zerbi?
I think it's an amazing case of football sliding doors, really. You know, if there hadn't been the Ukraine thing, he probably wouldn't have let Shatska. There's probably a good chance that the British government wouldn't have confiscated Chelsea off Abramovich. I think everything just dropped for us in the right place. I wasn't a Potter hater, but I wasn't a Potter fan. I don't believe if Potter had stayed, we'd be having these conversations, these exciting conversations now. I think RDZ has just raised the bar. I mean, we've all got our favourite Brighton managers. We've all got our favourite Brighton managers for various reasons, because they're part of when we were growing up, and, you know, various promotions and various things. And, you know, I've grown to love Barry Lloyd. That, you know, that's how things work.
Wow.
but I just think he is the greatest manager we've ever had. And I can't comprehend who the person to usurp him is going to be like.
Barry Lloyd will be delighted if you said that about him.
I thought you were going to say Barry Lloyd's going to usurp him.
You know, I've got a lot of time for Baz now, because there's lots of things that we didn't know. But we won't dwell on that, because I know Aidy got a bit upset because we're looking back, not looking forward. But I think RDZ is the finest manager we've ever had. He just excites me. And but it's the little things. It's the apologising for the last half hour at Wolves. That's unheard of.
Yeah.
You know, you're 4-1 up in the top flight and your manager's apologising because we didn't go for it even more. You know, and the great thing is, you know, when we had blipped against Everton, I was out at my place in Spain and I was sat in a bar and, you know, I thought there was a time difference issue, but I didn't realise it was that bad. You know, well, we got absolutely tongued. And what did he say? Do you know who the real winners of this tonight are? Manchester City, because we've got to go to Arsenal Sunday and Arsenal will see my team respond. And respond they did.
Absolutely.
You know, he just pulls, you know, he's almost like Clark Kent. He just pulls everything out at the right time. You know, we had a blip on Saturday. Saturday was no different to the Everton game at the end of last season. It was just one of those times where everything West Ham did, they got lucky. You know, but I just think, and I do think, as great as I think the Albion are, and I do think that we could break into the tops, to the big seven, so to speak, I think De Zerbi is destined for big things. And when I mean big things, I mean either the Italian national team or one of the big guns in, you know, in Italy, you know, one of the household names. I'd love Brighton to be a household name one day, but I'm not naive to think that they're nowhere near being an AC Milan or an Inter Milan or a Juventus.
Not yet.
I just think his stock is so high.
Oh, yeah.
And everybody loves him and what he does. And I'll tell you a little thing. When they played Liverpool and they drew 3-3, his first game when Trossard got the hat-trick.
The hat-trick, yeah.
Yeah.
He was in, he finished the night up in Donatello's and Dick Knight was in there at another table and he'd been told that Dick Knight was in there and he went over and said, I wanted to pay my respects to an Albion legend.
Oh,
and it's those little things. It's those little things. And, you know, I don't want to sound like my granny, the little things mean the most.
Oh, God,
and
yeah.
They do. You know, and I just think he's too good to be true. I mean, they let Rolf Harris paint the Queen. You know, what's going on?
I mean, the only thing that buoys me with this, the only thing that sort of, you know, the life raft that you cling to is that the fact that he feels such a greater sense of achievement in doing what he's done with the Albion and getting to the Europa League at a, quote, smaller club, as opposed to, say, Juve or Milan or Roma that could easily just step into. He could probably Shakhtar. Step into Barca if he or Real Madrid or Bayern Munich if they wanted him to. But the point is he feels so much, he feels a greater sense of satisfaction doing it with a medium-sized club than with a giant club, because with a giant club, you're kind of expected to do it. And again, we're back to Harty's point about him. It's the little things. It's the things that he finds important. And it's not about the glory of being with a big club. It's about the glory of the success that you yourself have made.
Harty?
But let's not dress it up. Part of it is, and Wardy told me about this when he signed in 1975, we live in the nicest part of the UK.
Yes.
So that will attract players. That will attract managers. You know, it is not Brighton Hove has got its bad points, but every place has got its bad points. But we've got the ocean. We've got the South Downs. We're a cosmopolitan society. We have the great thing that is pride. We have everything. Everything is so positive here.
Welcoming.
But you can't help but want to live here, can you?
And I always think back to actually the days of, when we're talking about the days of 25 years ago and the days of when we were with Dean, and this is sort of like a classic example of how things have changed. Nowadays, a player comes by, well, let's put it this way, Fatty was sold on watching the Albion on the box, but also of Roberto De Zerbi and, as you say, Ian, the little things. Now, if you rewind 10 years, you say, well, it's about the stadium. It's about the ambition. It's about Lancing, which has got, you know, this wonderful setup. You rewind 10 years from that, it was a case of don't let them anywhere near the football ground or the training ground. Just show them the seafront and the downs, because if they show them the football ground, they're not coming.
Mark?
No, exactly. Well, you know, Robbie Pethick ended up at Butlin's Bognor, didn't he? Because he took the wrong turning.
Yeah. Mark?
Which was probably better than the with Dean.
Yeah, I was just going to basically echo something Al said. Is that that thing about, and Harty, you've got a point with De Zerbi here. The whole thing of the working environment. Now, I've done a lot of, you know, film and television work and theatre work. And sometimes you could be working at really high levels and in a great environment if you're lucky. But sometimes you're not, because actually the working environment's a bit toxic, or you don't have control, or the environment isn't quite right. And one of the things I think that Albion's brilliant at is setting the tone of freeing up the coaching to do what it's really, really meant for, coaching the players. That's what De Zerbi loves doing. And he's got that free hand. And clearly the transfer market's been slightly tweaked to what we know the model is. If you look at the signings now, he's definitely had more say. He must have had a chat to Tony Bloom and Mr. Barber and said, you know, can I have some input on this? And there's now more of De Zerbi style players. So he has the free hand. I'm not sure he'd get that as some of the other clubs. If he went to Manchester United, do you think he'd have as much control? No. And I think he thrives. He's one of those managers who thrives on that coaching environment being clear for him to just do his magic job.
No, don't forget, Mark, that when he arrived here at Brighton, he brought his own transfer guy with him as part of his team. And he was very soon seen to be surplus to requirements, and De Zerbi allowed for that to happen, because he was happy with the setup, with what was going on, and the fact that we have a model and we have a way of bringing in players. So obviously, yeah, of course, the manager's always going to have some sort of input into the players and possibly the yay nay veto of it, but don't forget, a lot of the players we are bringing in, particularly, I'm possibly going back to what Ian was saying about Graham Potter here as well, is the fact that we're bringing these players in, and there was a pathway. We could see the pathway. The players could see the pathway, but the path was just a bit longer.
So basically,
what we have seen with since De Zerbi has come in is that path has got shorter, and we're seeing players that we're coming in that we've, let's face it, half the time we've never heard of them, unless you play Football Manager or this, that, and the other, and we're seeing them. Oh, that's going to be one. That's going to be one for the 21s. But they've come in and they've all of a sudden they're in the first team squad. All of a sudden they're in the first team.
And we're looking at you with the delightfully named Louis Flower.
Yeah.
Ian?
Could you have ever dreamed in those dark days that we would win the goal of the season?
That's true.
And we would have scored the goal of the season against arguably the best team on the planet.
Yeah. Well, to be fair, Gary Williams finished runner-up against the best team in the country at the time in 1980.
Well, the best team in Europe at the time, because they were the champions. And went on to win it again. I'm just saying it is fantasy football. But going back to that's a big point about what you say about RDZ, because he knows he's got the support network. You know, it's almost like the Muhammad Ali with his support network, and all the great people with their support network. But he likes nothing more to be at Lancing with a bag of balls, some cones,
big balls, and some players.
But I'm just saying, and that's absolutely, you know, we just, these are golden times.
Yes.
And the thing is, the four of us have known the bad times. You know, we were all at Palace in 2002 with the 5-0 defeat.
Thanks, mate.
You know, and you talk about the awful times at Gillingham and some of those. I remember, was it Jeff Wood's last game was against Cambridge United, and we lost 3-0, and it was just awful. And the sponsors even took the piss, didn't they? Because they gave Richie Barker man of the match, and he'd come off in the 53rd minute or something like that. It was just, but you can't have what we've got now without those times. But what we've got now is just, we're living in dreamland.
Yeah.
Absolute dreamland.
I think
we're all going to be on the...
So, all right, Hearty, let me ask you this question then. Okay. Yeah. Obviously, we've had the best of times, we've had the worst of times. You know, Gus Poyet always used to talk about the glass ceiling. Where is the ceiling now?
European champions.
I don't think there is one. I think we've got a sunshine roof from Nissan. You know, I think we, you know, we haven't got a glass ceiling now, because I think Leicester proved, sadly, it ended badly, but Leicester proved there isn't a glass ceiling. Yeah. I'm not going to say that we're going to win the Premier League, but I just think, you know, and unfortunately, history has proved Poirier wasn't all he should have been or all he was. He did a job for us, but you do have to wonder, there's certain things. But let's look, please, Adi, you're right. Let's not dwell on the past. Yeah.
I should point out that other cars are available.
Yes, indeed. but I just feel that you know, Tony promised us at the cup final reunion dinner that we would win a trophy soon, and I actually believe him. Mm. You know, this is not Ivor Kaplan or Tim Lowe and all, you know, making promises at election time. This is our owner telling us we're going to win a trophy soon, and we are going to win one.
Okay. Well, you are listening to the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast. And as ever, in association with oldfootballshirts.com. And Phil has sent us a rather fetching shirt for us to have a look at. A little bit Shrewsbury, I think, this one.
I was about to say, very Derek Smalls, this one, isn't it?
Well, bear in mind, I am wearing...
Are you wearing a Spinal Tap t-shirt at the moment yourself? it's basically, it's kind of blue and sandy yellow stripes. For those who've watched Spinal Tap several times, Derek Smalls wore it while being frisked at the airport while having a courgette with wrapped in foil stuffed down his trousers.
I always thought it was a cucumber.
Was it a cucumber? Well, I said courgette, same difference. I couldn't tell. It's sponsored. There's a big sponsor that says Transatlantica. I haven't bothered to look at the sleeve to see which country it is. The badge itself has got 5 stars under it. It's a shield with blue and yellow stripes, 5 stars under it. It's made by Puma, and I have absolutely no idea who it is. So I'm going to say someone as arbitrary as it's an Ajax shirt.
It is not an Ajax shirt. Anyone else want to hazard a guess at this one?
I think I'm going to go for Spain. Sort of Dijon, someone like that, you know,
Dijon. Dijon's in France, mate.
No, I thought Dijon
Sporting
Dijon. Spain. Sporting
it's not. It's not Spain. Spain, Mark.
I'm going South American here because
South America is a good start.
I reckon there's Libertadores stars there, as in big winners of their equivalent of the Champions League. Right. I'm thinking somewhere in Argentina, Boca Juniors.
Well, you are correct on the country, Mark. Would you like to have a go at the year?
Oh, cool. Blimey. Oh, there's, I wouldn't
interesting
know.
Thing. Could guess. You like to have a go
86.
At the year?
What?
Sorry, when?
86? I'm totally guessing. I have no idea.
Nowhere near.
Yeah, okay, Eddie, put us up.
Okay, well, here you go. This
Sorry,
is what Phil Shelley
is that a lime daiquiri you've got there, Mark?
Now, what I have here is in honour of Roberto De Zerbi, my lovely partner, Kevin.
A limoncello.
A limoncello cocktail. So, sante. Cheers. Cheerio. And here we go Europe.
I've actually got some limoncello being made here, actually. So, you have been warned.
Anywho, as Phil Shelley from oldfootballshirts.com has to say, here is your shirt of the week. And this is the 2004 to 2005 home shirt of Argentine Primera Division side Rosario Central. The side was formed in 1889 and it took its name from the English-owned railway company, Central Argentine Railway Company. They're one of the oldest teams in Latin America and the only side in the Santa Fe province of Argentina to have won a Colmebol tournament when they took the Copa Colmebol Cup in 1995. Nicknamed Canalla, which translates to be the rabble, they play at the 41,654 capacity Estadio Gigante de Arroyo, which was used in the 1978 World Cup finals, and it is in the city of Rosario, which is towards the northeast of Argentina. They've won the Primera Division on four occasions, six domestic cups, and the aforementioned Colmebol Cup as well. Links to the UK include Paolo Wanchope, who was born in Costa Rica, joined Derby County in 1997, went on to play for West Ham and Man City before leaving these shores and eventually joining Rosario in 2006 for a season. Angel Di Maria spent a season with Man United in 2014. He started his professional career at Rosario in 2005, and he now plays for Benfica. And current midfielder Francis McAllister, who is the oldest of the McAllisters, and he is also at Rosario currently. Of course, there's some links to the Albion. Diogo Arismendi made a couple of appearances for us while on loan from Stoke in 2010. He also made a handful of appearances for Rosario in 2018. And on December the 23rd, 2004, the same year that the shirt of this week or the shirt of the week was used, our teenage sensation to be Facundo Bonanotti was born, and he began his career with Rosario, playing 32 times before the Albion signed him in January the 1st this year. Yeah. Duke, thank you for that, Phil. Of course, you can see that and over 130,000 other shirts over at oldfootballshirts.com. Now, before we move on to lipping up Fatty, we should point out that on the weekend of the September the 17th, myself and Al will be appearing as part of the Reverbathon at the Hope and Ruin, Al.
Yep, it's a fundraiser. Radio Reverb only operates through, the funding operates through donations, grants, and sponsorship. We don't accept advertising, which is just as well, because adverts drive me around the twist. So that's the only way we can receive funding. So just to give ourselves a little bit of a nudge, we're asking you to dig deep. We do appreciate that it's, that things aren't sort of particularly sort of well for us all at the moment. But if you can dig into your pockets and find a couple of shekels and pass them our way. So we'll be live at midday at the Hope and Ruin on the 17th of September. For anyone who does like a Sunday morning jinky, then do please come down and join us. You can see how badly the show is put together, slash you can join in. It's entirely up to you. So see you then, hopefully, on the 17th. It's the day after we play Manchester United away.
And, of course, we are looking for extra sponsors for that show to help the Reverbathon. So if you are interested on that, please contact us at theAlbionRaw@yahoo.co.uk. Now, Alan.
Hello. Can I before we move on, can I just say you mentioned McAllister?
Have you they have a reunion in the Europa League.
They do. A reunion sans your words, yes. For those who didn't realise, Alexis obviously at Liverpool and Kevin is now at USG. So yes, there's a good chance they're going to be playing against each other. I just found that one of those sort of lovely cute little things that has been thrown up.
I do like that there's a McAllister called Kevin.
Yes. I wonder if they realize
any Home Alone fans will get that gag, but it's
I know. Sorry, what were you going to ask me?
I can't remember, but I mean, I was going to say,
yes, about being a fatty.
Alan, you are a big fan of the Scar, aren't you?
Yes, I do love kind of all forms of it, the early Jamaican stuff from 1960 all the way through the 60s and the Trojan record label into the 70s and the reggae, where they really just basically took folk songs and put a reggae beat to them, which drove you around the twist, and into the two-tone reunion. Now, Bad Manners weren't part of two-tone, but they were certainly part of that Ska revival, and they gave their name to an Albion player, which was so good of them. The foresight 40 years early is absolutely astonishing. That said, I've never seen Ansu Fati play, so can anyone tell me just how good he is?
Mark?
I only saw clips of this, but he does look like he's got a little bit of pace and vision and skill. He's obviously a Deserby style player, and he'll take him on and he'll go for it. I guess my suggestion of this was, in Ciso's injury has led to this, I think, because he's the type of player that was probably playing that position. And then obviously a season loan works out, hopefully, and Ciso comes back soon. And then there's a kind of similar player in the interim, in this European campaign. I wonder if that's part of the thinking, because he does remind me of Enciso to a degree. Mm.
I mean, we're hoping that Enciso will be back sometime after Christmas, Ian. But,
well, hopefully before
But this Ansu Fati, he burst onto the scene as a young 16-year-old. He had... Basically, everyone was saying he's going to be the next big thing, the next superstar. Obviously, he came into a Barcelona team that featured Messi and outplayed Messi for large periods of that. And he's just basically, I don't know, his career's just kind of like faltered a little bit. He's had some his injury problems, and he's also. Falling out of favour with Xavi at Barcelona. But the fact that such a starlet has ended up here, particularly if you read dispatches, Ian, about what's going on, and people are like, what? How is he going there? It tells you how far we've come.
Yeah, it does. And the thing that really makes my heart melt was the fact that he apparently turned Tottenham down in favour of us. So
there wasn't a dry eye in the house.
No, let's just see what happens. He's got this great CV, you know, and then he was the next big thing. Sadly, circumstances have worked against him, but he's still a relatively young man. A very young man. And I'm just really excited, really, really excited. And you know, it's just. It's always been a good time to be a Brighton fan, however bad things were, because it was Brighton and we loved them. However bad we were, we still love them. So it's always been a good time. But even now, it's an amazing time. Mm. And, you know, we're taking on, you know, Saudi FC at half five. And again, it's another benchmark. One, we've got to bounce back from the West Ham game. Two, that, you know, we've got this, we're buoyed by this great European draw. You know, Newcastle had quite a decent draw as well. It's just, you just go to the game looking forward to it all.
That's an important point that you've made there, Hearty, though. Because, I mean, you basically said, there's been so much concentration on this European adventure that there is a danger that you forget that there's also, I mean, I don't think the players will for a single minute. No. But I mean, from certainly from the stands, we're playing a normal run-of-the-mill league game against forget where the money's come from, a very decent side at the moment.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. But you know, I'm more concerned. You know, great the draw, and we'll all be booking flights once the fixtures come out. But I'm more concerned and looking forward to a response to the West Ham game.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So you know, forget the. All right, the signings are important, although I'm not sure either of them will feature. But we need a response to that defeat last week because it hurt. You know, and I think what better response to go and beat Newcastle, and then we just move on. Then we've got an international break. Although I think international football's reached. A new low this week, where if Harry Maguire and Jordan Henderson, bearing in mind the amount of football and the grades of football that they're playing in now, are still in the England squad, where are we going?
Yeah. Well, we're going to talk about that shortly, funnily enough. But whilst we're still talking about Fatty Mark,
What are you saying?
Obviously, he's got a very, very high pedigree.
What are you saying here, AD? I mean,
what?
What are we talking about, Fatty Mark?
I like a beer.
I think he's quite stale these days.
She's in a bar in Amsterdam. I'll take you there.
I know people never realise I do actually have an agenda, which I try to stick to. It's weird, isn't it? But
good luck.
No.
I have a show. I plan shows. Who knew? But But Mark, Fatty,
yes.
Where's he going to fit into our team?
There's no need to be rude.
Charming. Listen, there are no ways of pronouncing that bloke's name without sounding as though he's being obnoxious or abusive.
That's why I said Ansu earlier, because I was trying to be nice.
If I call him Ansu, you'll probably think I'm talking about a well-known product you can get in Boots. But
no, we're talking about my household, Fatty Ansu. So,
well, look, joking aside, I mean, you're asking me about this wonderful player. Go ahead, Edie, go on.
Yes, where is he going to fit into the team?
Right. Well, with the correct coaching, and I'm sure Roberto De Zerbi knows why he's been signed. He must have had input. He's the Enciso number 10, far as I can tell. I mean, I don't know. I'm not an expert. However, you look at the skill set he's got and the speed and the lovely, lovely balance he's got. Some of those runs he made. Oh, and he just looks awesome. He's going to excite. He's going to drive us a bit mad maybe when he acclimatizes. Because let's face it, the Premier League is a top, top league. He is going to have to adjust, and the physicality will be a challenge. He's a young man. I think we have to be very patient, and I don't think we'll see him, you know, in the first game tomorrow, today, whatever it is now, anyway, because he's not in the squad. But when he comes in, I hope they take him very slowly, bed him in gently. There's a cultural world to embed himself into, and he's a young man. Let's be patient, and enjoy him while he's here, because he is going to be, I think, a sensation.
Al, Mark used the word patience there. Now, obviously, when we sign a player, normally, you know, they have to have time to bed in, get used to a new country, a new environment. But bearing in mind, he's a lone player. Have we got time to be patient?
I think that
sign him if they didn't think he could land running. I mean, I think just a few games. When I say patient, I just don't think tomorrow. It's going to be the next few weeks, and it's got to be Europe. He's here to play in Europe.
Don't forget, we're only three games into the season. We've got 35 league games to go, at least six European games to go. Whether he plays against Chelsea in the League Cup is another matter. Yes, there's plenty of time still to go. Whether he gets to play, I mean, it's the one of the reasons that we've strengthened the squad to the extent that we've had. It's obviously quality and quantity, is because we're playing these extra games. Now, I'd like to think that the minimum target that we're going to have this season for the European campaign is that we're still in it come Christmas. I think I genuinely think it's going to be a little bit of a disappointment if we actually do go out in the group stages. Well, we'll see what happens. So it'd be nice to think that we're going to carry on playing into Europe into 2024. And for that, we're going to need that squad. So whether he's going to play week in, week out, or, you know, because there's not that many players, probably Jason Steele and Lewis Dunk, and Purvis is stooping down. The rest of them don't play 90 minutes. There is a decent carousel of players coming in and going out of a given game. So, you know, even sort of James Milner, he might be running, sounding as though he's building a shed, but he's not getting 90 minutes in. So I think it's all about sort of the squad rotation and the fact that we're not going to see him on the pitch all the time, just because we're not.
Sorry, Mark. Sorry, I thought you were about to make a point. Yeah, okay. So, I mean, in regards to that, I mean, you actually missed out Pascal Gross there, who does he plays 90 minutes pretty much most weeks.
Oh yeah, but to be fair, he's not exactly, he's totally and utterly unburdened by the worry of pace. So he's got his sort of regulatory area that will sort of patrol, but he won't do it quickly. So I don't think we're too worried about that.
But that is all we've got time for. We'll come back to you next week when we've got all the fixtures, and we'll look forward to that. But first, thank you so much to Mark Brailsworth. Thank you to Alan Ware. Thank you to Ian Hart. I've been Ailey Packham, and this has been the Albion Raw here on Radio Reverb. 97.2 FM online at RadioReverb.com on DAB. And of course, on our podcast and in association with OldFootballShirts.com. We'll see you all again next week. Thanks for listening. Bye. Oh,
before.